5 o'clock, so I'm going to call the March 23rd, 2015 Kituit Fire District Prudential Committee to order. The auditors aren't here, so we'll start with
only half of them.
Only half of the auditors. Is anyone recording? Amy Cates is recording. Is there any public comment? Is there any public comment? Please limit your comments to 3 minutes.
I'll make sure it is. Amy Cates, 4782 Falmouth Road. There's been a lot of discussion in the paper about public records requests, and I'm pleased to see that the new Attorney General is going to take a tougher approach to public bodies that that don't show respect for the public's need to know and for the public's requests, and that the public bodies protect the integrity of the public records so that they are, in fact, available when they're requested. And in October, I made a written public records request of the Treasurer's Office. I had spoken informally to our Assistant Treasurer, and she asked if I would please put it in writing. So on October 31st, I put in writing a request for the monthly appropriations report, and I asked if I could either get it as soon as the meeting had occurred or as close to the meeting as possible so that I'd be able to review it before the Prudential Committee meeting. And in November, December, January, and February, I got those records, and I got them the Thursday before the Prudential Committee meeting so that I was able to refer to the appropriations report in case I had questions of this public body. I'm in receipt of an email dated last Thursday from the Treasurer's Office, and it says, the monthly appropriation report is available at the Prudential Committee meeting, and that I need to see Charlie Eager. I was wondering if anybody could please speak to the change that appears to be happening. Thank you.
We'll be addressing that later in the meeting.
No, thank you.
Okay. I believe the auditors are now ready. Gentlemen.
Thank you and good evening, and it's our pleasure to come before you tonight to present the results of the fiscal year 2014 audit. Brian Brady, who is the lead auditor on the audit, is passing out a summary and overview that we did, and this is similar to what we've done in previous years, and it seems like we were just here doing this before. But it's nice we're in this, you know, before the next fiscal year ends. And that's a tribute to the improvements that have been made in the Treasurer's Office and the accounting for the district. But the main objective of our audit is to express opinion on the district's financial statements that they're prepared, are presented in all material respects fairly in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. And we also perform the audit in accordance with government auditing standards, which requires us to issue a report on the internal controls over financial reporting and compliance with laws and regulations. The results of the audit were an unmodified opinion on the district's financial statements, meaning that they are presented fairly in all material respects in accordance with GAAP, and that's the type of report that you do want to get. So that's good, and that's consistent with the prior years as well. And a couple of differences in the financial reporting model, a couple of different sets of financial statements are presented. The government-wide financial statements, which are on a full accrual basis, meaning that all your revenues are accrued, all your liabilities are reflected there, including your OPEB liabilities. And the net position at June 30th on an entity-wide basis was $3.8 million, which was a decrease of $397,000 for the year. The unrestricted net position was $1.2 million. And that decrease is attributed largely to the OPEB obligation, which was $235,000, an increase for the year. On a modified accrual basis, the fund basis statements, The total fund balance of the general fund was $2.2 million, which was a decrease of $174,000, and approximately $1.2 million of that fund balance was unassigned. And one of the main reasons for the decrease in the net position is you did vote to transfer $105,000 into the OPEB trust fund to start the funding of that. It'd be nice if you could put the whole liability in there, but nobody's done that yet except for one community. But you got to start working at it because that's what the bonding agencies are looking at. On the second page, we do refer to the last page of it, the budgetary schedule. And this just shows what your original budget was that was voted by district meeting, as well as any carryovers from FY13 into 14. And then the final budget, which takes out any encumbrances, it would include any subsequent transfers, and then takes out the encumbrances that are being carried into 15. And those results of operations, there was a deficit of $395,000, which isn't cause for alarm because you would anticipate using $700,000 of free cash. So if everything had come in as you budgeted and spent everything that was budgeted, that number would have been $700,000. So you had a $418,000 favorable variance in comparing your budget. And as noted, we did the report on internal control required by the government auditing standards. And we did have, as we've had in the past, material weakness related to the lack of segregation of duties, which, you know, you have something in place, but it's kind of the nature of the beast here with the district being so small. And then we had some management letter comments that are various issues related to internal control and additional communication that are being addressed. You know, one of those includes the material weakness, but that was the only significant one. The others were improvements, some of which had been corrected, relating to the internal control over the receivables. That's improved significantly over the past several years. And then just to recommend continuing the internal control and risk assessment documentation and policies and procedures. And then some of the new current year comments related to the procurement law. A lot of the procurement that the district does is related to the state bid list. It's just a matter of making sure you keep documentation on file, that matches up to the invoices that are being done, and you may want to consider to appoint a chief procurement officer. Some of the payable accounts, the withholdings and sales tax, just recommend that they be reconciled. We didn't see any significant variances, but recommend the reconciliation be performed. And a copy of the certified minutes from May of 14 was not on file for us to review, which would have been for the FY15 budget. And then we recommend improvement in the tax title obtained throughout the year from the town. You have been receiving summary control totals, mm-hmm. and just recommend getting the detail, which we did get that at year-end for the audit and everything checked out. But if anyone has any questions, we can try to answer them. It is 14. I noticed the date on the top when I flipped the page, yes, so we'll correct that in the final report. Good eyes, Michael. But we did get the rep letter. Michael handed me that, so we'll be able to get the final reports out to you. We'll have that to you tomorrow, yep. Yep.
Any questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Well, maybe there's just one question, since I'm new here. Number one, where does OPEB?
I'm sorry. It's kind of been a thing that's been around for quite a long time, so it kind of it's common understanding, but I apologize for not explaining that. It's other post-employment benefits, so it's the liability for the health insurance for active as well as retirees.
And on the discrepancies that you had, is there anything there that we really need to jump on right away, or?
No. A lot of the stuff we've discussed with Mike, and he's addressed most of it, or at least agreed, and those things are going to be addressed. And like I said, other than the material weakness, which is kind of the nature of the beast, those were not significant issues.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Thanks.
Have a good evening. Thank you.
You too. Thank you. Okay. So the 2016 budgets. Can we hear from the fire department?
Okay. There we go. Okay, so this is the Kituit Fire Rescue Department's draft FY 2016 budget. I do have copies for you, but that before Thursday.
Yeah, that's
you're all set. That'd be fine. Okay. Okay. So as you know, the budget is broken down into labor and salaries, and as well as maintenance, operational, and then we have a special appropriations. And so for the salaries, we have contractual increases. We understand that there is no current contract right now, but we still have to honor the contract that we have at hand. And so we have contractual increases in here, and they are labeled as such. So when you see this budget in front of you on Thursday, then you'll see the increases on that, and that the reasons is for contractual reasons. We went up for labor and salaries for our employees, including myself and the administrative assistant, to $20,583.77 from last year, FY15, the difference. Then we have categories that is we call full-time benefits and others, which is basically under the salary, labor and salaries, and that is, if you will, the overtime, from educational incentives all the way down to injury leaves, longevity, holiday. It's all spelt out in that location. And we, last year was $422,087.65. We went up slightly again to $444,008.77. I apologize, I didn't calculate out that for you, the difference. But we're looking at increases in volume of run numbers that we're up about 51 at this point in time since last year, incident numbers, so that's going to increase that number. Massachusetts State Academy, we are plugging that in, anticipating if there's an anticipated spot that a firefighter is not has not gone to the Massachusetts Fire Academy, it's roughly about $15,000 to $22,000 to send one person there. And vacation obviously increases for each firefighter that stays an extra year. Within that time period, there's contractual increases, so added value to that, as well as percentage increases for personnel coverage, holiday pay, and so forth. So the total of labor and salaries has gone up $42,504.89 from last year, from FY15. As we look to maintenance, our building is getting older. The last renovations was done in the 80s. Late 80s, so as you can see, it is showing its age. We're looking to replace doors, the actual doors, to go in and out. Not so much the apparatus bay doors; those seem to be okay. But just to get into our doors, this winter has been pretty tough on those doors. They're metal doors with metal frames, and some of them are actually rotting away and leaking through. So it's just been one tough winter, it seems like, for us all. So we had, last year, we had a maintenance budget, and again, maintenance for vehicles, apparatus are aging, and it's just costing us, it's just cost of doing business for our engines and our vehicles. Last year, we had a budget of $73,800. We've gone up to $80,500, which is an increase of $6,700. And the operational expense, to run the building from electrical, heat, you know, training, reimbursements, the internet, the professional expenses, administrative expenses, office expenses, as well as insurance expenses for the building and for the vehicles and for the liability. Those were increased, a percentage increase contractually, as well as the insurance, as we use the insurance quite a bit in the last 3 or 4 years, it's been climbing. So the increase to that whole item from operating expenses is $32,200. So it was $300,050 last year to $332,250, which gives a total of the total operating budget for the fire department has increased from last year $81,404.89. As you know, the Board of Fire Commissioners, I've been given reports to the Board of Fire Commissioners that we are looking to, we have a capital expenditure program in the fire department, and this year the fire chief's vehicle is to be replaced. It's a 2007. Chief Frazier picked that up in 2007. Roughly has about 90,000 miles on it right now. And that looks, it's slated to be replaced this year, this fiscal year, as well as one fire engine is slated, the 1989-1991 truck that we have, 265, is just slated to be replaced. So you'll see in the budget for a fire engine, we put $200,000. I originally put $550,000 in there, but I'm looking at lease programs now for these vehicles, so we might be able to lease the vehicle, and there's an upfront cost and then a yearly cost after that for the next 4 to 5 years, depending on what we look at and how we want to do that. So the total fire department budget has increased from $35,348.34 to $2,092,753, with an increase of $57,404.89. So that's the total increase. And that is our budget. We're going to, we need to submit that to the commissioners. And I believe you folks are going to come and visit us on our meeting on Thursday. And this is a draft. Hence the reason why I didn't. It's still a work in progress, and we're still just fine-tuning the budget, if you will. But if there's any questions, I'd love to answer.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Going through that.
Thank you.
No questions? No questions? Mr. Kiley. Good evening.
Well, good evening, everyone. Frederick Kiley, Board of Water Commissioners. And so I've given you a draft of our proposed fiscal 2016 budget for the Water Department. What you'll see right away is that labor and salaries, that section on the left column, on the right-hand side under 16, is blank. We haven't completed our survey of other departments in the local labor market where we determine what the salary points will be. We'll have that for you, obviously, before the April Prudential Committee meeting. Going along in that same column, proposed FY16, you'll see that a number of line items are highlighted in bold. And that represents either an increase or a decrease in the proposed amount for that particular item. Most of the bolds that you'll see are increases. not dramatic. I think the largest group of increases that you'll see is in operations towards the bottom in the insurance section. You'll see that each property and liability insurance, vehicle insurance, and workman's comp each have an increase. And those three items total about $4,600 of increase. To put that in perspective, though, backing out the labor and salaries, if you look at our FY15 budget, which was without the labor and salaries, was $381,900. For this year, in 16, we're proposing $390,800, an increase of $8,900 over last year, approximately 2.3%, somewhere in there. We're comfortable that those are all, you know, very realistic. The only one, of course, we've budgeted an increase in the truck fuel. It would appear that maybe gasoline prices will stay lower this year, but who can say? You know, it's hard to, it's hard to predict that one.
I'm not planning my budget on it going staying down.
Yeah. Going back to labor and salaries, what I will highlight for you is that, as I think some of you or most people will recall, we did have a very high number for office manager, and that was due to the new hire and some time that Sherry spent training our new office manager. So that was a big number, and clearly that's coming down. I anticipate, if you look at the labor and salary subtotal of $343,410, that was in last year. I anticipate this year will probably be somewhere in the $300,000 range, or a decrease there of approximately $43,000. And again, that was just that was an unusual thing. It's not like there's any great Houdini trick where we're saving all this money here. It was really just a lot of overlap. We also have two new operators, Operator A and Operator B, are new employees this calendar year, so that they're starting at a lower base pay due to their level of licensing and other factors. So, again, the amounts that we had for the two operators in last year's budget will be lower as well. Do you have any questions on the basic labor, salaries, mm-hmm. operations? Okay. The other sheet that, of course, we'll be providing is our capital plan, and we'll also be giving you two articles for the warrant as special appropriations. And one that we've been talking about, of course, is the construction of the replacement and construction of a new tank for the West Street tank, including decommissioning Main Street and West Street tanks as well. The contractor that we've been working with, the engineering firm, Green Steel, has done a terrific job over the last 6 months, and they have, at our last meeting this month, they provided us with a cost estimate that, including contingencies, is at $2.1 million. And we're very comfortable with that is the number that can go out to bid, and we'll be, you know, we'll find a qualified bidder at those numbers. So we're pretty comfortable with that one. The only other article that we'll have would be replacement for one of the trucks. And that, we're almost done with the getting the estimates. We think it's approximately $30,000. Superintendent felt that wasn't going to change. That's why I'm comfortable giving you that number. And that's to replace the superintendent's truck. That truck is 10 years old. We typically look to replace them at 9 years. That's seen a little bit lighter duty than the other service trucks, so we've got a little bit of extra life out of it. But again, it's time. We've put a lot into it. I think you'll see, not 100% sure, but I think we went over on truck repair, not by much, but we went over, you know, by $350 on truck repair. I think primarily it was repairs to that truck, so that's the only other one. Any questions there?
I have one question. Excuse me, the $2.1 million figure, is that for taking down the two existing, does that include taking down the two existing towers and putting up the new one, or just
yes,
the new
it does.
One?
It does. Yep. And within that, there is that amount allows for demolition of both the existing tanks, Main Street and West Street, in two different fashions, too. There are two ways that they can come down. One is a disassembly where they're just cut into pieces and lowered down with a crane. The second is hit the leg and let her go and cut them on the ground. And the demolition companies haven't determined if that's feasible in either location. But if it is, there will be a savings there. Probably it's approximately half the cost to do to top. They call topple versus disassemble. We'll keep you advised. Anything else?
The replacement of trucks, and it kind of goes for the fire department too. I mean, you don't need to be up there, but I mean, my own personal bent is I run things into the ground, and I know you have operational contingencies. You don't want to come out at midnight and the thing doesn't start. But 90,000, 6 years or 7 years old, and only 90,000 miles on these vehicles. Can't we, if we spend $1,000 next year on each one of these vehicles, maintaining them, price $30,000 or $40,000 to replace them, we're still ahead of the game. So, help me understand why we do this.
Well, for us, having a vehicle out of service is problematic in that we only have we have three trucks and four operators, and the trucks are sort of have their dedicated uses and they go in different directions. So when a truck's out of service, it creates just a logistics problem within the department. When you take the cost of the vehicle and go out over, you know, 9 or 10 years, basically you can amortize it at X per year. Let's say it's $3,000 per year. Having that fixed cost for budgeting purposes is easy than sort of having the wild card of saying, well, I wish maintenance was maybe $1,000 here or there. The cost of vehicle maintenance in this day and age, you can get hit with a $3,000 or $4,000 problem with, say, it's a transmission on the plow truck. It's sort of, we sort of buffer everything by having them under warranty for a certain amount of time, and then we do sort of have that retained, risk portion for the next 4 or 5 years. But in any type of utility business, you can't really have that wild card factor, if you will. It's sort of like the rule of thumb. You have your physical assets for the utility, and you've got to reinvest in them at a certain percentage on an annual basis. Otherwise, you get to a point with deferred maintenance where it just creates a house of cards that gets away from you. That's the way we look at it. I'm not saying that we couldn't go back and retool it, but it's sort of a top down protocol that goes with sort of the engineering and utility standard.
Would you kind of call it an industry, sort of if you were in an industry, like an industry standard, because of your responsibilities to have it just replace them over?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to speak for the chief, but I think I'd say the same thing, especially with his equipment. When you get to a point where you approach, let's say, an 80% use of a usable lifespan, that last 20%, you kind of playing with fire. You know, you need to make your plan to replace it or to rehabilitate, you know, the asset at that point. You don't go to the end or over the line and then, you know, try to get the funding in the next budget, because you can get caught in a gap like that too. You know, if a piece of equipment goes out on you the day after a district meeting, you know, you've got a 12-month period where you're trying to juggle it that way.
Thank you.
Okay, sure. All set? Great. All right. Appreciate your time.
Christopher Olson, Fire Chief. Your Fire Chief Katuit. Ditto to that. However, the fire department works on a safety basis, on life safety. So it really is important for us to keep our vehicles up to date and usable. It is an industry standard, as well as we do a capital plan layout. And we look at all our vehicles, and as we go through this vehicle, this particular vehicle we're looking for, was to be replaced last year. However, we put a $4,000 transmission in this vehicle, so we said, well, let's just keep it for another year and see how it operates. It's just important to make sure that our vehicles run safely. We also have a mechanic that we hire, and we actually go on their recommendation on the vehicles, the age of the vehicles, how we use the vehicle, and what's the next step in aging out a vehicle. So we look at all the different factors, but good question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just mention some Freedom Hall budget things? So clearly anybody who drove in saw the potholes on the apron created by the snow. So I have an estimate of around $2,500 to repair those potholes. Also, they're starting to work on installing the lines for the air conditioning, which means that I think we need to give serious consideration to reinstalling shades in the hall. Because if anybody's been in here in July and August, the sun beating in on the southern side is brings the place right up to about 90 easily. I've been sort of working on prices, and I think, you know, prices for just pull-down roller shades for these six windows, which are 100 inches tall and 42 inches wide, is probably going to be around between $1,200 and $1,500. Storm windows. I really think we should reinstall storm windows on the rest of the building, which would be the back windows, since they don't have any, so that we can keep the heat we're generating in. And I was at All Cape Aluminum, who installed the windows in the hall on these big windows, and he thought a price of about $1,800 for those would be appropriate. And and I think that's except for the snow removal costs. I would suggest increasing the budget for landscape care of the building, so that, you know, we can do some trimming of the shrubs and maybe put down some mulch and maybe consider about doing something to rehabilitate the lawn. And that's all I have for Freedom Hall. Any questions, concerns?
Do we have any idea how much snow? Do we have any idea how much the snow plowing has cost us this winter?
I believe it's I think it was around $600. Is that?
That's not bad, considering.
No.
That. I think we paid that much at home.
Yeah.
The grounds year to date is $1,275, and that's against the $200.
Yeah.
We knew the $200 for the snow plow, so I'm assuming it's all snow plow.
Yeah.
In addition to what you've received from the water department, from the fire department, I've already forwarded you the same template we've used the last 2 years, a draft of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a running start at the reserve fund article, the finance department article. We'll fill in the fire section now that we're getting that. The water, same thing. The Freedom Hall budget, we'll do a workshop to beat that into shape. There's a draft in that package. There's placeholders for articles for this building. We need to have you start looking maybe comprehensively at putting all the insurance together in the Prudential Committee budget. There's some in fire. There's some in water. Now there's some in Freedom Hall's budget. Now we have a new property that you're either going to have to blend into a district property account so that you're not just funding Freedom Hall, but you're funding the second property or a separate for the new property. So we have some design to do. So the best thing to do is the bylaws require that you get delivered this massive amount of paperwork. It's here. We'll get into the schedule at some point. We'll update the schedule for the district meeting and can chop in some workshops. You've got fire initially on Thursday. You can do one with water. They're still in a work in progress. We can take a couple. I also sent you a pretty good calculation of the benefits budget for the district. It's down to the person. Rates went up 10% on that particular health insurance across the board. So that's all done, and there's documentation to support the numbers that we have in that budget. So we're in particularly good shape, I think. Everything is ready to go. We're dropping the numbers. It's only March. You've got all of April and into late May. So you've got a good 60 days to work this thing into shape before you make your final recommendations and close the warrant. So with that, I would say, you know, when we get to the schedule, if there is one on your agenda, if not, we can pull it out and do it now while you're on the budget. I have one. I sent you a new one. It should have come from Fran because I just sent her and she circulates to you folks. We're here at the Monday, March 23rd meeting. You have a fire budget meeting with the commission on the 26th.
Correct.
And then there's room to drop in a reasonably good schedule for you folks to go through the budgets over the next several weeks. We still have the same hard dates we had on the previous one for the nomination papers, petition articles, etc. But it's that pending section right there. And then if you've picked up any dates for the Civic Association, we'll post the warrant with the clerk once it's all done. But those are the pending slots on the schedule.
So the warrant meeting for the Civic Association is the 21st of April. And candidates night is the 19th of May.
I'll put that on the list, too. I don't think I have that on there. Candidates.
I'll put those on the calendar.
Okay. Night is, could I hit that date again? May
19th.
May 19th. Okay. And then do you want to set some dates for workshops yourselves today, or do you want to circulate a calendar and we can drop them in? Just let me know what days work for you.
When are you going to be back?
I'll be back on the 3rd of April, which is a Friday.
So, what about
I'm away the first 3 days of that week.
Yeah. So what about April 6th?
What day is that?
That's a Monday.
That works for me, yeah. And I'll be away. But
oh, okay.
I'm away at 6, 7, and 8, I think, that week. Monday, Tuesday.
Oh, okay. All right. Can we do it Thursday the 9th?
From what time to what time? Thursday's a day.
Oh, okay. We could do it Monday the 13th.
That works.
That would be better for me. Okay. Okay. At 5 o'clock.
So that was what day again?
Do you want to
April 13th.
Do you want to do our stuff that day? Because you need that. You're going to have a preliminary session with fire.
Right.
You still need to schedule a water. And we have a pretty good list of our own stuff to deal with.
Right.
So 13th is us?
13th is us.
Okay.
And what would be the subject that I mean?
Well, it'd be
the
Freedom Hall, the
Prudential
budget, all of the articles I just went through that's in the handout that I've already sent to you. So it'd be the reserve fund, the finance budget, the Freedom Hall budget, streetlights, library, debt, benefits, stabilization fund. There's plenty there. So it's straightforward. And then do you want to do another one with water?
Let me.
Water has. He's still here.
Oh.
Do you have another meeting scheduled, Mr. Chairman? Right.
We can do that.
That'll be the.
That'd be the
April 27th. That's regular pre-com meeting. It says April 26th on my work paper. Is it the 27th?
Yeah, this. It's like 27th of May.
It's a Monday.
It's a Monday.
Yeah,
it's 27th of April. Yep, 27th. So we'll fix that date because that's been on there at the 26th. And that's the day the warrant closes, too, the 27th. Okay. And then if you need another one with fire or we have to do more, you've got plenty of time between the 13th.
Yeah.
You could drop one in that other week.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll update this and circulate this.
Great.
Schedule. Drop in the candidates tonight. Put in the reviews. And it'll be good to go. And then as they trickle in, I'll drop water into this. I'll drop the water articles into this. I'll run you some debt scenario on a $2.1 million cost of bond. Get a sense of how that's going to impact future budgets. And we'll take that up on the 13th in the debt budget. How's that?
That sounds good.
Okay.
So next we need is the loan.
I'm going to do the loan, okay. We have two notes outstanding right now. We have one for the water mains on Main Street, and we have one for a project that was to repair to replace the roads, paving the roads in the wells on the water properties. We sold the first one 2 years ago in April, and we paid down 1/5 last year. We have a 1/5 in this year's budget, which we'll pay down, and we'll roll that note for $165,000, and we'll pay that down at $55,000 a clip for the next 3 years, and it'll be gone. The one for $200,000 for the water main, we took that. That project's moving forward. We've financed the engineering and some of the already the mobilization costs. That's going to we're going to roll that over. That's been out for a year, and we're going to pay down $40,000 on that one and roll $160,000, and that's also scheduled at $40,000 a year for the remaining 5 years, 4 years to go after we make. This pay down this month. Those two, basically, we're going to roll that 160 and the 165. We, at the same time as we authorized the roads for the water department, the district meeting also authorized a water system security upgrade in the tanks and well fields and so forth. And that's been kind of in the queue for a while, but the department's committed to starting that project in actually this fiscal year. So we're going to take $20,000 of that original $200,000 authority. That's all that the superintendent needs to do what he's going to do initially. If he needs more, we'll take more as time goes on. So he's asked for $20,000. So we're taking $20,000 of new money on that authority. We also have an authority for the purchase of the property on High Street, which we have done an internal borrowing with the DOR, and we need to finalize the borrowing for that. That cost us $299,000 plus the closing costs. We need $306,000 to consummate that total transaction. So we're going to take $306,000 of new money for that. That just leaves one other authority on our books, which is the water restriction on the property next to the Kettleers. And there may be some need for that later on in fiscal 16, but there's no need, at least until September, for that. So we're just going to wait to issue anything on that. So, in effect, we went out to bid for $651,000 of notes for four different specific purposes. And in effect, we sold one note to Eastern Bank through the bid process for basically 1 year. I think it's 2 days shy of a full year, because we can't mature on a Saturday or Sunday. And we're issuing on April 10th, and I think it's going to mature on the 8th, if I recall. So with our bid, we had two bids. One was for 55 basis points, or just a hair over a half a percentage point. The other was for 50 basis points. Eastern Bank won the bid. So I'm going to ask you to vote to approve the issuance of a $651,000 note to Eastern Bank at 50 basis points for the term expiring April 8, 2016. And if somebody would say so moved.
So moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so now what I'm going to have you do is I'm going to have you sign.
This?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's just an example.
Do the budget for fiscal 16, we'll be budgeting the interest for this note, and we'll be budgeting the pay downs on the individual projects associated with this note. doing. What we're issuing is actually a State House note. And so I'm going to have you folks sign the appropriate contract there. That note has to be signed by us, sent up to Boston, approved by the Department of Revenue, and sent to the bank before the closing, which is April 10th. So we're in pretty good shape. We've got at least 3 weeks.
This is all for the same $651,000?
Yes, that's the actual note itself. The paperwork we just signed was the bank paperwork. That's the agreement with the lenders. And this is, and the clerk's going to sign and seal that document that he witnessed your signature. This is the certificate of the clerk that this meeting took place and the votes took place. And you're going to sign in this section here. That note will go to the bank, and then when it's paid, the bank will return it to the district of Mark Payne. The clerk has also provided clerks to sign and witness that as well. The clerk has already signed some other documents for the Commonwealth that are going to go up with some other certified warrants and certified votes, because we can't sell until the legal department of the DOR
is
that confirmed.
Is it just one form?
We have complied with all the laws and the votes taken in proper. So now we have signed all of the paperwork to allow the Department of Revenue. The note is underwritten by the Commonwealth. This is what's called a State House note. It's reasonably easy to issue. The issuance cost is really my kind. If we sell a bond, it's going to cost us that $2.1 million. It costs us close to $50,000 to issue a bond. And then we have SEC disclosure, which we also already have because it's an existing bond, which these audited financial statements that we just delivered tonight will be added to our SEC disclosure document and delivered to the Fed on time the first time since the bond was sold. Okay. Appreciate it. So we'll send this off to Boston in the morning. They'll approve it, send it back down to the bank. The transaction will take place at our bank. And appreciate your effort. Thank you very much. If anything comes up, I'll let you know. Otherwise, we'll just have a nice, seamless transaction on April 10th.
Thank you. So the next agenda item is the treasurer's request for compensation because we've gone over what we contracted for. And
I don't have it with me. I did read it over, and I have no questions.
Okay. And Stan, were you able to read it over?
No. I don't. Did I have a copy of it?
Yeah.
I'll brief you.
Oh, the FAA. This is the FAA. Yes,
yeah.
I read the FAA.
Basically, and we can cover your other agenda item at the same time under the same agenda.
Okay.
The contract that you originally issued was a what I would call a weak contract. The RFP was weak, and it basically sought an hourly rate. It didn't really require any thought about how much that rate was and how much work was involved. Under 30B, we have to give a maximum and sign a contract with a contract maximum. So we bid that with the knowledge that we had at the time, which was minimal, and we estimated 300 hours a year, which is a fair for what we thought we were engaging. Last year, the 300 times the $110 an hour was $33,000, and that's what we bid originally for both years, and in effect,
it's never changed because there's never been another bid. Last year, we probably ate well over 100 hours. We bid to give 300. We went beyond 400, and we just ate it. This year, we've had the exact same, in fact, more aggressive requirements to get the district's finances where they need to be. We've, as the auditor said tonight, we've completed two audits since this fiscal year began, the one for the previous year and the one for 2 years ago. Last year we did one for the previous year, and the year before we helped do one for the previous year, but you've always been a year behind.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one reason why we've had an inordinate amount of hours. The same with everything else, whether it's catching up the bank recs or the accounts receivable records, dealing with one person that you had hired transitioning out and hiring a second person, and we were invested in the time spent to interview and recruit and define and train. So all of those were unforeseen activities that warranted more use of hours than we had ever thought we would budget for. A 30B allows you to amend contracts up to 25% based on need. So even though I'm telling you we're going to exceed 400 hours again, the most we can agree to change would be 75 hours. We're at a point where we've just buttoned up the audit. The budget's in pretty good shape. The templates are going. We really need to focus a little now on the accounting side. We've gotten more training in for Tony. Cash and the accounts receivable and real accounting work, getting those accounts scrubbed up and in good shape, is important. And that's primarily where the work will be from now through June. If you don't amend the contract, we'll just do the best we can, but it would be more incentivized to get the right work done if we had a little bit more available to us to justify the work we're going to do. That's really the crux of it. The discussion about the management letter and particularly the material weakness, the biggest problem is the water department has one staff person doing both the billing, the collecting, and the posting of the payments. And the only way to resolve that is to break that job into two positions. And the water department went through a process where they obviously, the commission did not want to do that, so they hired a single person, and it just continues to exacerbate that control. That is really the crux of what their findings are. In the Treasury side, it was always one person. Now there's two. There's a staff person who basically receives all the checks and deposits, makes out the deposit, I take it to the bank. The person posts it into the ledger, I reconcile the bank to the ledger. So we've torn down that internal control problem where you had one person putting the money in the bank, receiving the money, putting it in the ledger, reconciling it, cutting checks. It really needed to be broken into two, and you've accomplished it in the finance office with the position and the contractual arrangement. You haven't done it in the water department, and that'll continue to be a finding each year unless that changes. Now, that being said, you're talking about going out for a contract and bidding again. And I had recommended the West Barnstable contract as a model contract when you were first working on it, but you went with more of a county-style contract. The contract we have with West Barnstable requires us to come to June 30th, and then they hold 15% of the gross fee, and then we are to provide the year-end financial statements, get them ready for audit. So regardless of when we terminate our contract, we still have an obligation to close out the year. Your contract that exists right now terminates June 30th completely. Won't even be bank statements in, so June cash is not going to be reconciled. The year end is happening, payrolls are happening. If you're thinking about changing, you should again consider looking at the model that West Barnstable uses that says you do all this during the year and you get 85% of your fee, but we're going to reserve 15% of your fee until you button up the books for the year.
I think I actually got a copy of West Farms. You may have. Calls, but God knows if I can find it now.
So there's two things here I'm trying to point out. One is I would like you to amend the existing contract by 25% on the hours so that we can continue to beat the system into as best of shape as we can through June 30th. The second thing is when you go out to bid, consider looking at alternatives to what you currently have, because on June 30, the world comes to an end as far as your contractual relationship goes, and either somebody starts brand new or there's no obligation of the former to do anything for the subsequent. And that's important as you transition from one to another. So you may even need to contract with two vendors at the end of the year into next year to try to mesh a cohesive transition, whereas if you use the West Barnstable model, you don't have that problem. New person comes in, starts with the July 1 budgets, starts going off with their set of books, and the old contractor deals with the prior set of books, gets the free cash certified, and gets the audit commenced, and then gets paid. So those are my two points on those two topics. Thank you.
Any comments?
No, I would just assume, I recommend going ahead and approving the addition to cover those extra hours.
Oh, I would definitely. I make a motion that we increase the amount paid to by 25%.
Or $8,250.
Okay.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That probably would require a transfer from the reserve fund, because I'm not sure the budget can handle that much of an amendment without a... It is unforeseen, and it's warranted because it was unforeseen, I believe.
What do we need to do going forward? Because even with this amendment here, 30 June is the end of your responsibility, right?
That's the end of the contract that we have right now. It may not be the end of my responsibility, but it's the end of the district contract that exists. So what you do with your next contract will be important going forward, but there's not much you could do here with this one. It's just going to have – you're going to have to bid the next one knowing, and then you may have to circle back around depending on who wins the bid and say, well – if you're giving it to this guy, he's got to understand coming in that it's he's picking up with not a clean cutoff. But that's just being the way the product was bid back 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago when you went out to bid. I don't know how you deal with that until you wait and see how you move forward. The other alternative is you hire a person and you have an assistant and an employee. And it may be cheaper, and it may not be, but there's always the option of having two employees, which at the time originally was not necessarily what the district wanted to do, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to continue with the model you've been using. And then you would go out and recruit and hire a person who would serve as treasurer and supervise, presumably an assistant. It would still break up that workload. What that would do is perhaps offer an opportunity for a reduction of duties in the water for that clerical person, perhaps cut some costs there and then add some duties into the finance office to help with that internal control problem that exists by having one person do everything from soup to nuts. So there's several options on the table that you can decide between now and June 30th. You've got to put them in your budget for the year beginning July 1, and you've got to get out to bid sometime in May, presumably, or before district meeting to lock that down in your budget. But you've got a month or so to figure out where you want to go from here. And it's either an employee or it's a contract. And those are really what you have to hash out.
Okay, but that's going forward, looking forward. What do we do this June 30th when you're no longer...
Well, that's
obligated to
that's what you go out to bid for or hire someone for effective, and you can hire someone sooner than June 30th.
And can overlap.
So you can have overlap, or you can issue a new contract that commences before June 30th to provide overlap. You can just issue a new contract the way it is at July 1, and the bidder knows coming in that it's they're going to pick up, and it's going to be a heavy July, August, and September. There's no right or wrong. It's just that you're in a position, you need to understand your options, and those are your options. But I don't have an absolute for you, I'm sorry. We can talk about it when we do these workshops and try to hash some things out. And if you do a workshop or you hash out the actual language for what you're going out to bid, I'll be happy to help with that as well. But you took a vote to amend the contract, but you did not take a vote to make the reserve fund transfer. Do you want to do that tonight, or do you want to do that at a future meeting? It doesn't matter to me. But I think your budget's going to be in
Okay, I move that we transfer the sum of $8,250 from the reserve fund to meet the obligation for the treasurer's services.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So moved.
Okay, so I kind of covered the compensation and the RFP, but you're still on the RFP technically.
Yeah. We'll work on the RFP at our next meeting. Is that okay?
Yeah, I just have one question.
Sure.
Is it a simple matter of just taking the wording from the West Barnstable RFP and combining it with what Elaine did for us, if the county did for us? Or
probably. You need to look at that model to understand how it leverages the buyer.
Okay.
I don't think the buyer fully leveraged itself when it went out to bid the last time. It certainly didn't leverage the seller either. But, you know, I think you need to think in more terms of making the proposers give you a sense of how many hours it's going to take to accomplish whatever it is you're seeking to be served. And if it's going to be start July 1, close this year, and then, oh, by the way, next year you're going to close next year. That's the way we've been doing it. Our contract has just been do whatever needs doing during the 12 months. So to get to the end of the 12th month, it expires with no obligation to do anything else. And that's a weakness, I think, from the buyer's perspective.
All set?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So could I have you've reviewed the minutes from the February 26th meeting? From the February minutes?
That's when I started really running into trouble with the computer.
So,
I've read them quickly. I didn't see anything.
Okay. And Stan, do you have any corrections for those minutes?
I'm not sure if I do or not, to tell you the truth.
So we can hold off and wait till the next meeting to approve them.
Well, we can do them at the workshop.
Yeah, right.
Just won't take us five
the other minutes. Thing is that what we need to do and we can do now is release the executive session minutes from concerning the purchase of 56 High Street. And so I need approval to release the minutes of June 19th, July 10th, and August 18th of 2014.
19.
10 July, 18 August.
I move that we release the executive session minutes from 6:19, June 19th, July 10th, and August 18th of 2014.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then regarding the October 27th executive meeting, which was held to discuss the firefighters negotiating the contract with the firefighters. Those are clearly not ready to be released since that process is still ongoing. And so those executive session minutes will remain confidential for the moment. Okay. And Ms. Hadley, do you want to...
Yes, in a previous board that Ms. Cates was a member of, we adopted a policy of all requests for public information to go to the clerk, the district clerk. who would evaluate and make sure that there was no privileged information or anything like that that was being requested. And if he approved it, then he could release the information. I think we've been that sort of fallen by the wayside. I think it was a good policy. I think we should vote to, I'm not sure what the word is, but to continue that policy.
Reinstitute it?
And to reinstitute it and to make sure that the chairman of the Fire and Water Commissioners are fully aware of it.
And does that include the treasurer's office?
And the treasurer's office.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not aware of any allowance, unless the treasurer is, that if somebody just sort of writes one letter and say they want, you know, ongoing copies of treasurer's reports, that's sufficient to get those reports. Certainly, it wouldn't be sufficient with the town of Barnstable treasurer, which I've worked with in the past.
I have no problem sending the weekly report to whoever is on a circulation list. It's not, the statutes don't say you can't. The whole concept of Sunshine Week and all of the freedom of information in the world is the more you give out, the better off you are. I have no problem. If, as you can see, we've been easily circulating it to not only yourselves, the department heads, whoever wants one. Every week we issue it. I would actually ask if the clerk would allow that to be continued, just because it's easy. It's not going. There's no mistakes. There's less labor involved.
No printing cost to the district.
It's a PDF file on an email. So I have no problem doing that. I would encourage you to allow me to do that, and if you don't, I understand.
Is that weekly or monthly?
Weekly. Every week she sends it out. You've asked not to receive it, I think, only monthly. Somebody has not to receive it only monthly, but I get one every week from her, and I don't look at who's on the list right now.
Yeah, no, I don't get one weekly.
May
I ask a question of Ms. Gates?
Sure.
Are you indicating that you would be happy with monthly reports?
My request is for monthly reports.
Okay.
Yeah. It gets harder to know who's on what circulation.
So it's easier for you to do it.
Whoever wants them gets them every week. They can delete them. It doesn't take but a millisecond to do it, and they're current. And it's easier to just have a circulation list than it is to, this one's on this list on this day. There's going to be mistakes made. The more complicated it gets made, but if nobody wants them weekly, we'll just do it on the Thursday before.
I would be fine with the Thursday before the meeting.
Yeah. I'll check with Water and Fire, but
that's fine. The Thursday before your meeting, we'll just circulate the most current version.
Yeah.
And we'll circulate it to the list of whoever wants to be on it, if that's all right with you all.
So, but in terms of any other documents or requests for information from the district, they all should go through the district clerk, which is the proper procedure. Could I have a second for the motion to reinstitute that policy?
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Is there any way of, like, in the future, posting these on a website so people can just draw on them, so you don't have to have a circulation list? Then if somebody in Moscow comes,
I think it's more difficult to post anything on a website than to send an email. Once we've sent it, we've sent it. If you want us to send it to the posting person who posts the email to the website, we're happy to add them to the weekly list, the monthly list.
I can ask Patricia.
Yeah, see if that can be done. This way you don't have to worry about
it. But that does incur a cost because we pay Patricia for everything she does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's still a good thing to do. So
I just as soon have it on the website so that everybody can see it.
We'll add her to the circulation list. You just let us know she's good for it, and we'll send it to her as well.
It just happens to be, it has to be in the PDF format, a standard PDF format. And the website, that particular part of the website has to be open so that people can pull the information from it.
She can change it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to convert it to an open document?
No.
No, you just want to...
I don't know what, an open what you mean by an open document.
It's just going to go on the website as a PDF.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can't alter a PDF.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. No, we wouldn't want it in an open source document.
What you got there, Fran?
Oh, no, I don't want, no, I don't want that.
Okay.
Want somebody to be able, anybody who wants to look at it or pull it down and print it can do that.
Yeah. They can do that as long as they have the Adobe Reader application, yeah, which is free.
So I just wanted to add at the end of the meeting, this is from the Barnesville Patriot 2 weeks ago.
Amy, is that, does that work for you? Does that particular strategy work for you? Is it, it's available on a website, you can pull it down? No, it'll be put on a website, and then you go to the town's website, and you just pull
our
it
website. District. You go to the district website.
The Thursday before the presidential meeting?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure it's going to be posted on that day. If we email it, you'd have to.
If you email it to Patricia,
it'll be done. Yeah.
So we'll send it to the webmaster.
Yeah.
And to you folks.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay, so the Barnesville Patriot, about 2 weeks ago, in the early files, in 1935,
Tom read that to me.
Freedom Hall, the meeting place for all Cotuit activities, was accepted as a gift from its owners by the fire district at the annual Monday evening meeting. The discussion of the evening centered on the proposition. Some 200 voters attended the meeting, a motion to appropriate $5,000 for enlarging the building, so to provide a dance floor, showers, bowling alley, and a suitable basketball court was adopted 76-62. But lacking the required two-thirds vote for the appropriation, it was not effective. So I can tell you, out of all of this, they got the basketball court.
We did play basketball in here. They had wooden grates on the windows, so we couldn't break the windows.
That's why there were cages on the lights.
Yeah.
So that's it. So we could have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you. We're adjourned.